It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The veritable plethora of apps now available is mind-blowing. But only one brings you the news and talk you love. The free iHeartRadio app at 55KRC.com.
Well, we're waiting.
The 55KRC, the talk station. Dubai, it's good to hear Ted Knight over there.
Well, we're waiting.
Caddyshack. Classic. Happy Friday Eve. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to be. Hope you're having a wonderful day so far. Give it some time. Hang out here on the 55KRC Morning Show, and we'll hear from Chris Doerr of Gun Owners, or OhioGunOwners.org, about constitutional carry and the pending legislation in the legislative branch up in Columbus. What is the Second Amendment Preservation Act? He'll answer that question. Maybe I'll find out what he thinks about Biden's efforts with the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, turning you into a felon if you have a short-barreled rifle. We'll get to the gist of that a little bit. Betsy Sunderman returns. We'll hear from her opinion, her thoughts, comments about Wendell Young, the decision from the Supreme Court to let him stay, have his seat. He'll keep it till through November when he's term limited. Wendy Young, of course, under indictment for destruction of evidence owned by the city of Cincinnati. Senator Rand, I told you so, Paul. He'll be on at 8:05. Talk, of course, about Dr. Fauci, who's in major get-all-defensive mode. Dr. Fauci just lashing back at his critics the other day. His days are numbered. I hope so, anyway. At least that's me being optimistic. It is Thursday, 8:30. That means Jay Ratliff returns to the program, iHeartMedia's aviation expert. United, joining Delta's. They will not hire people who have not been vaccinated. Gee, will they hire people who have COVID-19 antibodies and therefore will not get COVID, just like a vaccinated person, perhaps even more so? We'll find out. I don't know if Jay knows the answer to that question, but I'm going to keep asking it out loud since I don't need a vaccine having suffered through COVID-19 already. Ask a virologist. Golly, it drives me crazy. Anyhow, also under Jay's topic of conversations, and I saw this, I could not believe, and I can't wait. I have a feeling Jay's going to be a little indignant about the audacity of American Airlines after laying off 30% of the workforce due to COVID and getting billions of dollars in taxpayer money because of COVID, right? Got to save the airline industry, brr, 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 brr. They're asking the workers to work six-hour shifts for free. Joe, if your employer called you up and started asking you to work for extra hours for free, happy birthday, right? Two words for you, and they aren't happy birthday. My dad's chuckling right now, if he's awake. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's the American public should be mad at them for the nerve of that one. Anyhow, he'll also get a report on hub delays. There's a couple other aviation questions I wanted to bounce off the top of his head as well. What else is going on? Oh, real quick here, and I appreciate everybody who chimed in because this is something that's been bothering me, and it certainly should come as no surprise to me. I was so pleased to be able to interview the author of Breaking the News, Alex Marlow. He's from Breitbart, senior editor. I've talked to him on the program before. And I interviewed him about his book, about China having so much influence. They're ultimately underwriting the leftist news reporting that occurs on CNN and other channels. And they do that to their financial detriment. And I've observed this. You know, ultimately, what this left-wing demands are will lead to a form of socialism or communism that there will be no ad revenue. I mean, they're sort of pushing for their own destruction. short version of kind of the point I've made many, many times over the years. And just I always stare in disbelief. Why are they doing this? Well, the point is, it's China. They have 1.5 billion people in China, and all the businesses are trying to crack into that market. They want all the Chinese dollars. And in order to do that, you got to cater to China. China wants something by way of a specific message. These media outlets owned by leftists, and they are happy to cater to that message so they can get more influence in China, or at least you know, get more acceptance in China and break into the market. So, yeah, the news is not meant to be profitable. It's underwritten by Chinese dollars. It was kind of a long point. Good book, though. Chock full of information. And 1/3 of the book is references. So you have the footnotes, the specific citations. He does a great job, Alex does, of reporting actual information. And to the extent you don't believe what he writes in the substance of the book, flip back to the notes and the indices and the bibliography and you can look at the source material and you can judge for yourself whether it was, you know, summarized accurately by Alex. But the long and the short of it is they ended up putting an article mentioning my name. Brian Thomas, Breaking the News, explains how China underwrites unprofitable media. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't recall that I've ever been mentioned in any sort of national forum ever. And of course, every website can be argued to be national. So I've got my 55KRC website, the podcast and the blog page. But this is Breitbart. You know, a lot of people that never have heard of me would go to Breitbart and get information. So there it is. Who's Brian Thomas? That was even my post. Who? Along with a link. Now to my broader point on this whole thing. One person liked it. One person liked that post. And this is not me thinking, well, I demand that more people like that, or even I'll take a dislike or a frowny face or a comment. But every week, anybody who has me, any connection with me on Facebook knows, Friday, I say Happy Friday. And I do post pictures of my dog. And that's about all I really use Facebook for, other than keeping, you know, connecting with my friends behind the scenes, you know, little instant messages I'll get throughout the program. People are offering me links to articles. If I bring up a topic on the radio, someone invariably will shoot me a quick Facebook message with a link, you know, talking about what I'm talking about. So it's really a convenient thing to have on while I'm on the radio. But otherwise, it's Facebook. You know, I don't spend really much time on it at all, other than my couple of occasional weekly posts. In response to a typical Happy Friday post, I might get 150 people smiling, you know, giving me the thumbs up, making a comment, wishing me Happy Friday. It's a nice little exchange. I enjoy it. But I do get what I would argue is a reasonable, I have almost 5,000, you know, quote unquote friends on Facebook. So if, you know, I gotta get 150 people responding, okay, fine. Clearly someone has seen my well wishes for them. And anytime I post a picture of Archer, I'll get even more. He's like, Archer, yeah, I love your dog. He's cute, blah, blah, blah. Here's a picture of my dog. Again, it's a fun, light, fellowship-like exchange. And that's one of the reasons why I, you know, continue to tolerate Facebook. Yeah, I put a picture up of my dog on the 6th of June. 141 people replied. And I got 12 comments. And so there you have it. That's the average. I put a link to the Breitbart book interview. It's the article that mentions me, and it's a link to Breitbart. One person liked. That was it. Nothing else. And I thought, well, that's rather curious by comparison. And this is a substantive thing. You know, even, I mean, my friends, I know my friends, and I think they would be very happy to find out that I got some broader national attention to the whole thing. So yesterday afternoon or evening, I posted this. Interesting. I usually get quite a few likes, comments after posting a picture of Archer or Happy Friday. But when I post a link about the broader media attention regarding my interview with a conservative book author, nothing. Wondering if anyone saw my post/link. And I ended up editing it later after a whole bunch of people replied. I got 60 replies to that one. 99% of everything that came in, nope, didn't see it, was not on my feed. I always get your pictures. I always get your Happy Fridays. It always pops up on my feed. This did not. They had to go directly to my Facebook page and scroll down to try to find the article link. There you have it. So, you know, here's one illustration of how Facebook suppresses information that people might find interesting. People who are friends of mine regularly getting my posts, my innocuous posts, I might add, do not get ones that relate to, specifically, I'm sure it was the word Breitbart in the link that resulted in this thing being suppressed by Facebook. So real-life illustration of what's going on out there. And a lot of people say, well, that's typical Facebook. That's just what they do. It happens to me all the time. So you may be familiar with the concept. This is it working in reality. They didn't delete the link. They didn't throw me off Facebook for posting, and it is a legitimate interview with a book author. I don't know under what basis they can throw it off. It was just a typical standard interview, but it doesn't make it out into the broader world unless you are actively going out to every single individual you're friends with or any specific Facebook site and looking to see what they have posted. There's your algorithm for you. Bias? Much? 515. 5KRCD Talk Station. 749-5500. 800-823-TALK. Pound 550 on your AT&T phone. Was that me whining, Joe? You think that was a whine? Your fingers slipped, my... KRCD Talk Station. Just wondering where to go, and since we do Stack is Stupid in the 5 o'clock hour, I feel as though this should be right on top of the Stack is Stupid, but it's to be taken more seriously than most of the Stack is Stupid stories that we do today, we use today. And you know, this is from a UK paper, so you can take it with a large grain of salt, but by the same token, this is the type of crap. And I mean that, and I will emphasize it, and I wish I could avoid FCC compliance issues and be more direct and explicit with my summary of this nonsense, but the FCC does listen, so we'll have to stick with this is a giant pile of excrement. Apple pie is racist. Apple pie. They've jumped the shark on this one, I think, Joe. There's the bubbling bong of stupidity. It's a UK newspaper, the Guardian. Someone who's described as author and scholar. Would you put that in your resume? Well, I know you put anything on a business card, but who with a straight face, I am a scholar. Well, you know what? Go to hell. Scholar and what? Do you know me? I went to West Point. Good one. Author and scholar Raj Patel, no, you haven't heard of him, lists the ways that people are wrong in assuming that nothing can be more American than, for example, apple pie. Apple pie. He goes into length about the often bloody origins of the apple pie. Quote, in the drama of nationalist culture, the bloody and international origins of the apple pie are a subject to a collective amnesia. Huh. Wow. We need to dive on into this, don't we? Apple pie. Quote, the apple pie is America as American as stolen land, wealth, and labor. We live its consequences today. We live apple pie's consequences today, Joe. This author, described as a research professor at the Lyndon Baines Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas. Well, that's a mouthful right there, isn't it? Anything named Phrasing. After LBJ. The article, quote, food injustice has deep roots. Let's start with American apple pie, close quote. That is actually the name of the article. You think there's a course in that one, Joe? You can pay $500 a credit hour to learn about this? All right, it details how apples came to the West in the 1500s with the colonists and their, in his words, vast and ongoing genocide of indigenous people. English colonizers then used apple trees, and again in his words, in a quote, as markers of civilization, which is to say, property. John Chapman, better known as Johnny Appleseed, took these markers of colonized property to the frontiers of the United States expansion, where his trees stood as symbols that indigenous communities had been extirpated. Wow. Moving over to sugar, he linked that to the slave trade. Gingham, the cloth you usually serve it on, right there, that's capitalism, war capitalism, that, in his words, enslaved and committed acts of genocide against millions of indigenous people in North America and millions of Africans and their descendants through the transatlantic slave trade. Which I will be quick to note, many indigenous Africans were a part of and profited on gathering up their fellow black folks and loading them onto those awful, god-awful slave ships. Unbelievable. This is, you know, this is how far we've gotten. And then, thankfully, there seems to be a groundswell, a grassroots groundswell reaction and backlash to this nonsense that is being taught in our to our children in classroom, the woke education, generally speaking. And I'm glad to see it. And in fact, parents and students in schools in Loudoun County, Virginia, have gone to court to fight against this nonsense, if I may call it, being taught to our children in class. The idea that they need to be self-loathing and hate themselves because in our past we've done some bad things. And who among us can say their record is completely clean in that regard? So anyhow, people are fighting back, but it's crap like this that I think, you know, makes people wake up and realize, you know, this, if it was published 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it would have been in the Onion. I mean, seriously, this is something you could make up and write in the Onion, the satire news site. And there's some funny stuff on there. And this would have made me laugh 10, 15 years ago. And we've come that far that this person, this scholar and author, this professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas actually is serious when he attacks apple pie. Another symbol of America and American unity down the toilet.
Lighten up, Francis.
You think he's going to go after baseball and Chevrolet next, Joe? Well, they named Chevrolet after an Indian tribe, didn't they? So, or a Native American tribe. So we can't have that either. That's cultural appropriation. 526 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Foreign exchange. Talk Station. It's 531. 55 Care CD Talk Station, and it's Friday Eve. And here you go. Yeah, I was talking about Facebook earlier in a different context, but I mentioned, you know, during the show, people send me instant messages. Thank you. Corey sent me a link, you know, along the heels of this, I want to curse today. This jerk this deciding that apple pie is steeped in racism and colonialism and shouldn't be eaten or whatever. New York Times editorial board, Corey sent me the article from the Independent Chronicle. Seeing an American flag is disturbing. New York Times, Mary Gay. I saw, you know, dozens and dozens of pickup trucks with expletives against Joe Biden on the back of them, Trump flags, and in some cases, just dozens of American flags, which is also just disturbing. Which essentially the message was clear. This is my country. This is not your country. I own this. Where do they come up with these ridiculous conclusions?
I mean war, man. Wow. War.
And for it looks.
Wow.
He's a little Winona Ryder there. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program. Happy Thursday to you.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Yeah, I'd like to curse myself this morning. Actually, I just did because I just traveled the entire length of the Norwood Lateral behind two idiots, and I'll be nice about it, driving 50 miles an hour right next to each other. They're
I hate that. That's just... That
literally,
yeah.
And then one would go a little further and then not clear, and then
the other one would catch up, right, doing it on purpose. Well, Joe, we can give them an award for that one. Anybody out there doing that kind of thing, we know what award they're going to get.
Right, Absolutely. Let them have it. Yeah, I had, when I finally got by him, I gave him a good old horn there, and I don't know. I'm sure that shook him up. Anyway, I'm calling about Trump. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation about whether he's going to run or not. And, of course, he likes to throw those hints out there.
Sure he does.
The one comment he made about when he's back in the White House, he's not going to have any more dinners with Zuckerberg and his wife. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I tell you, you know, he needs to. The one issue I had, and I'm not really upset about this. I just know there's enough people that are. He just loves to throw those zingers out there. And when you're looking for someone in leadership, that might be something you might want to lay off, you know, and not do as much.
Yep.
But I tell you what, he is the king of just getting it to people, and he's got the platform for it, and he's always been high profile, so he knows how to use it to his ability. But, you know, I'm thinking about all the people that I've worked for over the years, and the leaders and superintendents and foremen and owners that I've worked for in construction. And the best ones are the ones that you can get along with and work with and cooperate with. But the key factor is when it was necessary, they knew how to turn the ass button on and get something done.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that is severely lacking in politics.
Yeah, no question about that, Tom. Yeah, you all know who the good leaders are. And there is a balance in being a good leader. Got to be able to know how to crack that whip, though, at the right time. Real quick here, shocking no one who's been out filling their gas tank of late. Gas prices now more than $3 a gallon in Cincinnati. This is over the last several days. Earlier this week, Gas Buddy reporting the average price in Cincinnati, $2.95 a gallon. That was Monday. Yesterday, $3.15. Demand for gasoline pushing higher, that the summer driving season underway. According to Gas Buddy data, gasoline demand last week eclipsed the prior week when millions of Americans were gearing up for Memorial Day. That, according to Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for Gas Buddy. Prices in Cincinnati jumped, yes, again, north of $3. Reason for the increase due to demand, crude oil prices, and global supply. I've got an article on global supply. Have you noticed the price of everything has gone up? No inflation here. It is insane, the chain of events that has led to this historic jump in prices in virtually everything. Supply chain disruptions, demand increases, shutdowns due to hackers, and oh my word, when you look at the detail and how the stars aligned post-COVID, get used to it. Get those loins girded, because I don't see it going away anytime soon. 5:36 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. It is 5:41 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy Thursday. Yeah, I can't see the gas prices getting any lower. Of course, Joe Biden is doing everything he can to shut down any sort of additional land leases that on land that we are responsible for. He just shut down ANWR again. That's an on and off proposition. The Keystone Pipeline people finally gave up the ghost. They just said, well, to heck with it. So here I am struggling again with FCC compliance. I was trying to sum up their exasperation, but they shut down the project. It's done. It's dead. It's over with. So worse for climate now that the pipeline won't be built, because all that gas or all that shale oil will still be moved out from the Canadian fields and packed into trucks or railroads and shipped off. And we all know that they produce carbon when they move oil overland on rail and in trucking. So stupid, absolutely. And there's Joe Biden warning us yesterday again, like he hadn't said this 9,000 times, that somehow, in some way, it's not the murder skyrocketing or crime skyrocketing. It's not the situation with the American economy, that it's climate change, which is the greatest threat to the United States security. And he insisted, he said, this is not a joke. See, because when you say something like that, after hearing that over and over and over for the past 20 years, some people begin to not take it seriously and think that, in fact, it is a joke. So there's Joe Biden reminding you that he's not kidding when he tells you that, yes, climate change, a degree increase in our world's temperature over some long protracted period of time, is somehow a greater threat than, oh, I don't know, maybe the China and the South China Sea, the pandemic. Research scientists messing with deadly viruses and then unleashing them on the world. I mean, you and I could come up with a real long list. I mean, I think I'd put maybe our national deficit runaway spending at number one. Who knows? But in his mind, it's global warming. And naturally, remember Barack Obama said it, you're necessarily going to see the price of fuel increase. Why? Because we don't want you to use it. Make it more expensive, force you to be more fuel efficient. It's not a question of real true economics. It's tinkering with the laws of supply and demand. Do we have enough supply? Yes. We were oil independent.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Fracking saved us. We didn't rely on OPEC anymore. Yay, it's a beautiful revolution. Who'd have thought? I thought we were going to run out of oil. We've been through peak oil already. Wrong. Pat, I know you got a comment on this topic. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brian. And before I talk about this topic that you were talking about, I would like to congratulate you. You said you were mentioned on the National.
Breitbart.
Yeah.
My name was right in the front of the article, Pat. Brian Thomas, colon. I thought I couldn't believe it. I thought somebody sent me an article written by somebody else named Brian Thomas. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you and your family should celebrate because, let me say this, Brian, you don't really need Breitbart to be mentioned.
Well, you're kind.
I'm going to mention you. In fact, I'm going to mention you today. I got to talk about some topics that are going on. You are one of the... How do I put this? You are one of the hosts that I feel that should be mentioned no matter what, because you get up every morning and you are dedicated to the show. You give everyone an opportunity to get on the radio and express their views, and I hope that there are people that are listening today. More people, in my opinion, should be calling your show and weighing in on the very topics of the day.
So, I appreciate it, Pat. That's very kind of you.
No, I really mean that. But having said that, I'll go into the topic real quick. The
price
gas,
of gas, right? Yes. I know. Go ahead.
It is driving me crazy. Brian, I'm at the point I've never wanted to buy a motorcycle or even a bicycle, but I'm thinking of the alternative if the gas prices go up. And I'm pretty sure many of your listeners might be thinking, okay, well, if you're going to keep going up on gas prices, I might do the alternative, buy a bicycle, yeah, buy a moped,
Pat,
do something.
I hear you. I understand that, but see, that's exactly what they want. By manipulating artificially the price of gas, and I'm not saying all of the increase here lately is artificial because there are massive supply chain interruptions, and that's out of people's hands in many cases. But if they necessarily want to increase the price of gas. The reason is because they want to move you over to some alternative vehicle. Now, they might suggest an electric vehicle, but, you know, reality has to step in. We realize the manufacturing costs, the environmental damage done to create batteries, and all of that relates to really not a whole lot of savings in terms of carbon output. But they would rather have you do that. And if that's out of your reach, they would love. And in fact, there's someone out there smiling right now going, yeah, we won. We got another bicycle rider out of her car. So. Yeah.
No, I'm not giving up the car. I'm just saying
a second
way. Or the other alternative would be I would fill up on a certain day, and then the other days I just would not fill up. And I think at some point we'll all get on the same page, and it has to go down at some point. Or the other alternative, we just don't vote for Governor DeWine and we go with maybe Josh Mandel or someone, and that'll help too.
It will, because he is interested in freeing up lands for fracking in Ohio, because
yeah.
We have our fields just like they do in Pennsylvania and West Virginia right next door. Thanks, Pat. I appreciate your kind words, too. Have a great day and stay well. It is 552, 55 KRCD Talk Station. I'm going to get jumping to the stack, you stupid. I've got a couple of minutes here. Let's see here. Happy Meal. At what age do you quit getting Happy Meals? Man of Virginia allegedly threatened to execute everyone. This at a McDonald's because he was unable to get a Happy Meal. He also believed to have threatened several other people in the area before authorities finally got him. Happened at McDonald's in Stafford County. According to the Facebook by the Stafford County Sheriff's Department post, the police statement the suspect said, or they said the suspect's been identified as James Springer, who is 36 years old. Springer worked as a DoorDash driver at the time and had arrived at the McDonald's just before 10 in the morning. Isn't that breakfast time at McDonald's? He got agitated when he was told it was too early to get a Happy Meal. Witness reportedly stated that Springer, before leaving the restaurant, said that he would come back and execute everyone. So they called the police. According to the sheriff's post on Facebook, deputies were working to identify the suspect when a brandishing call was dispatched at Stafford Marketplace. The victim reported the driver of a white Toyota Yaris pointed a handgun at her and her passengers while passing through the merge area at Garrisonville Road. Post continued to explain while the officer was searching for the suspect, another report came in of an unprovoked threat involving a gun. The Aquia McDonald's called in to report an irate DoorDash driver had returned. Deputy Eastman arrived, took suspect into custody without incident. It was learned that the suspect had used abusive and threatening language toward the customer during the visit. Been charged with disorderly conduct, abusive language, and 4 counts of brandishing. I didn't know you could be charged with abusive language. I'm going to have to watch myself from time to time. Okay, we can give an award out for this guy as well. Forget Steve. Tampering with food. A man arrested for allegedly placing razor blades in pizza dough.
Here he is, the biggest douche of the universe.
He is Nicholas R. Mitchell. He's going to enter a plea of guilty. Could be up to 7 years in prison for tampering with a consumer product. Apparently willing to accept a sentence of up to 4 years and 9 months in prison for the plea deal. Arrested for after a customer at a grocery store in Maine reported finding the razor blades hidden inside of prepackaged Portland pie pizza dough that had been bought from a supermarket. Mitchell, former associate at that company. Anyway, let's see what Steve's got. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program. Happy Thursday.
Man, there are some sick people out
sick.
There. Maybe the Happy Meal guy should have been trying to buy an angry meal from them.
There you go.
Put in perspective, pal. It's not that big a deal.
I know.
But I'm going to take Pat's advice, and instead of being passive listening, as I always do, I'm going to call in again today.
Thanks, Steve.
Rand Paul's my senator, and I don't know anything about this, and you probably don't either. But on developing a vaccine for a virus, all we heard was 4 to 5 years. And I understand they pumped a ton of money into this and allowed the companies to pursue every option. But here's what I'm proposing, and you might ask him this. If it's a man-made virus, is it easier to develop a man-made vaccine? And is that maybe one reason, circumstantial evidence, that they developed a vaccine so quickly? If it's a naturally occurring virus, maybe it's harder to develop a man-made vaccine. I'm thinking puzzle pieces that go together. But it is something to think about.
Yeah, I wish I knew more about virology and the science behind making vaccines. And you're right, I don't know if it's easier or not. I do know that the four-year track, which is typical, is largely a product of all the clinical trials they're required to do, efficacy standards, testing. Once you get to the human clinical trials, you know, they do have a period of time to make sure that there's no effect. So naturally, it is a protracted period of time. My understanding is they gave some liability protection to the vaccine manufacturers for this one due to the emergency situation and allowed them to move past a lot of the rechecking and retesting that they're typically responsible for doing before this vaccine was released, which obviously raises concerns of its own. So, yeah, I'll see if I can't run that by the good senator. He'll be on at 8:05 for folks just tuning in. Senator Rand Paul in the 8 o'clock hour. Thank you for calling, Steve. I appreciate it, man. 557 right now. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Plenty to talk about. And remember, at 7:05, Chris Doerr, OhioGunOwners.org. Constitutional carry, Second Amendment Preservation Act. I'll be right back after the news.
This is an increasing threat.
It's all going to zero.
Fiscally irresponsible thing we've done.
What happens next happens here on 55 KRC, the talk station.
It is 6:06 right now. 55 KRC, the talk station. Friday Eve. Good one, too, here, because 1 hour from now, we'll be talking guns with OhioGunOwners.org's Chris Doerr. He returns to the program to talk about the constitutional carry legislation that's pending in Ohio, and he'll answer the question, what is the Second Amendment Preservation Act? We also get him to answer some questions about the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms efforts to tell you that you are a felon if you have one of those. Well, they have a new proposed rule from the Biden administration that short-barreled rifle, if you have a handgun that is equipped with a stabilizing pistol brace, you need to get an FFL license. You know, pay $200, go through a 9-month background check or whatever, just so you can have something that is, it's slightly more functional. I don't understand the logic behind this crap. I really do not. You got a handgun. It's legal to carry. You can conceal it quite easily. It's one of the reasons people carry concealed, because you can have a deadly weapon to defend yourself, and nobody has to really know that it's on you. All you do is add what amounts to a piece of plastic to that gun, a stock, and the next thing you know, you're a felon. That's at least according to the Biden ATF proposed rules and regs. So I'm looking forward to raising that issue with Chris Doerr, in addition to talking about the Ohio legislation. Betsy Sunderman from Cincinnati City Council will be on at 7:40 to talk about Wendell Young and the decision by the Supreme Court to not suspend him. Senator Rand, I told you so, Paul, returns at 8:05 to the 55 KRC Morning Show, and that is, yeah, he's one of the good ones, man. Thanks again to the state of Kentucky. Jay Ratliff, our aviation expert on a host of topics, including one that he's not ready for, but I'm going to ask him anyway, the rules about heavier passengers on planes and new safety limits coming to airlines thanks to America's chronic obesity problem. Before I get into other topics, I have a caller on the line, and you're free to call too. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Let's start with Mike and see what he's got. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, bud. I seen something on YouTube that just burnt my ass. They had a clip on there in Chicago. These kids had this cop cruiser that was he was going real slow. Now, I've never heard of this before. These kids was on top of this cop cruiser. They were doing this twerking thing, filthy, vulgar act, and these poor cops was going real slow in fear of knocking one of those kids.
Right, yeah, got to let them go and do their thing, and if we speed away or otherwise try to intervene, then something's going to happen. The cop's going to get blamed for being a racist or whatever.
I can't take any more of this.
Well, thankfully, you don't live in Chicago, Mike.
Oh, my God in heaven. Hey, I remember a time where Elvis Presley on Ed Sullivan's show, they shot him from the hips up because he was wiggling.
Yeah, well, society's a different place than it was back then, Mike. I'll let everybody decide for themselves whether it's better or worse. But, yeah, the disrespect, I mean, whether or not you approve of twerking as a form of dance or expression is independent of whether or not you should be able to dance any type of dance, including ballroom dancing, on top of a cop car. That, to me, is the big offense right there in the middle of that. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We could go back to the 1950s when they wouldn't allow Elvis Presley from the anything below the sort of the middle of his chest down because of his, you know, gyrating pelvis. But did you ever see the old sock hops and the jitterbug dances? Same time frame? Yeah, there's some pretty risque moves going on in that. Surprised that people got away with it then. But you see, it wasn't broadcast on TV. That just made it okay. Anyhow, since he brought up crime, one of the things I did want to bring up, I mean, trust me, the defund the police effort is going absolutely nowhere. And in those areas where they have done it, the citizenry is absolutely aghast. They're not happy about it. It is not a popular thing, in spite of the fact that the left wing is trying to shove it down your throat. Only a small subset of our American people is in favor, or are rather in favor, of defunding or getting rid of the police. Atlanta, up in Buckhead, Atlanta, which is one of the toniest neighborhoods in the entire country. I had to go there for business one year. It's a really, really nice area, Buckhead. They're talking about hiring their own police department. They say their neighborhood has turned into a war zone. As of May, murders in Atlanta, generally speaking, up 63% compared to last year. 57 murders reported so far this year. Number of shootings up 45% between 2020 and 2021. Buckhead, the ritzy, Tony neighborhood where they're, well, facing problems that they've never faced before, they've had murders up 40% this year as of the end of May. 7 so far. They had 5 last year. That's 133% increase from the 3 reported in 2019. Murder jumped 200% in the most recently available 28-day period. That means there were 2 reported murders compared to none in the same period last year. So we're now dealing with huge numbers, but we're dealing with crime statistics. That's one illustration of crime statistics that are up all over the country. And as I do, I always read what Tucker Carlson has to say. And so there's usually an op-ed piece that sort of springs from his televised commentary. And he was joking around in a very straight-faced way, but making some very subtle yet comical points about maybe Americans should apply for asylum in El Salvador because it's, well, safer there, literally, than it is in Chicago and Baltimore. I mean, Kamala Harris is down on this in Central America, or was anyway, telling them that they need to get their act together, that, you know, we are going to come in like some white knight on a horse and just hand out $1 billion, and they'll magically transform their economy. And, you know, Tucker joked about that as well. He said, oh, yeah, that'll be easy. Eh, no problem. It's just that should take, what, a couple of weeks to fix? Anyway, that she's down there, and that, you know, once we turn your country into this peaceful utopia, your citizens won't want to flee. And one can only imagine the litany of problems they have in Central America that leads to people wanting to flee. But, of course, Kamala Harris is going to focus on global warming or something. But in his analysis of this and this ridiculous thought, he said, we had a conversation with the president of El Salvador not so long ago, and he made a point. We were in his country shooting a documentary on MS-13 and immigration. During our interview, he pointed out that actually it might make sense for people on the south side of Chicago to apply for refugee status in El Salvador, not the other way around. Tucker said, you know, the United States has seen a dramatic increase in crime, murders in cities across the country. What would your advice to be to leaders in the United States? President Bukele, quote, to be tough on crime. Before El Salvador was the murder capital of the world. 3 years ago, it was the murder capital of the world. Now, crime has been reduced to 75%. Violent crimes. So now, it's more dangerous to live in Chicago than it is to live in El Salvador. That's a true thing. El Salvador is safer than many major American cities. Baltimore, for example, 51 murders per 100,000 residents. Same year, San Salvador had 50.3. Now, that's a 0.7 murders per 100,000 less. But remember, we're talking about the murder capital of the world at one point. San Salvador was long the most dangerous city in the hemisphere. Baltimore also had a higher murder rate than Guatemala, Honduras, and Afghanistan. New York City shootings year-to-date are up 81%. Overall, major cities in the United States have seen a 33% increase in homicides this last year. And that crime spike has continued on into this year. So it really demands, you know, sort of an analysis of the reality of what we're doing here in the United States. This effort to defund police or have police no longer, patrol and police more heavily in high crime neighborhoods, pulling them out of there to lessen the interaction between the police and people in the community. Meanwhile, people in the community are mowing each other down on a daily record-setting basis. So much so that, yes, you can say with a straight face that it's safer to be in Central America and Afghanistan than it is in certain American cities. Let that sink in. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris is out telling folks how to live their lives. 616, 55 KRC, the talk station. 749-55. It's 621 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Friday Eve. One of the local stories that I mentioned last hour, 5 o'clock hour, 315 average gas price in Cincinnati, or roughly 315, up 20 cents from just Monday, up dramatically since last year. A lot of things are impacting that, and of course, one of which is anything green coming out of the federal government. You may have heard the news. Yes, the XL pipeline is no more. The Canadian company that was going to build it, provide thousands of jobs, reduce carbon production, has pulled the plug on the whole thing. Thanks to the Biden administration for that. And the editorial board over the journal, America's energy gift to dictators, China, Russia, and Iran will exploit the U.S. retreat on fossil fuels. Welcome. See, this is your world policy. This is the Biden administration's global view of life. Global warming is the number one threat. This is not a joke, so saith Joe Biden, so we need to quit pumping oil while the rest of the world continues to pump it. Journal writes, the U.S. is barreling toward one of the greatest self-inflicted wounds in its history. This came to a sharper focus last week when President Biden suspended oil leases in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Even as Russia and the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, announced production increases. Mr. Biden's anti-carbon fusillade will have no effect on climate as global demand for fossil fuels will continue to increase for decades, no matter what the U.S. does. Meantime, Russia, China, Iran will take advantage of America's astonishing fossil fuel retreat. Not long ago, the U.S. depended on OPEC for much of its oil supply, but hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling enabled producers to extract oil and natural gas once believed unrecoverable. Shale frackers from North Dakota to Texas unleashed a surge of oil and gas onto global markets, breaking OPEC's dominance on supply. OPEC tried to break the U.S. producers by flooding markets, but frackers became more efficient. By 2019, the U.S. was producing nearly 2.5 times as much crude as in 2008. OPEC and Russia have had to limit their production to lift prices to shore up budgets that depend on petrodollars. U.S. producers reduced investment during the pandemic as demand plunged, while prices have since recovered to a two-year high. A larger U.S. retrenchment driven by government and progressive investors is on the way. And as I emphasize that in my tone of voice, remember, that also means even higher gas prices are on the way. 2 weeks ago, the hedge fund called Engine Number One, allied with big asset managers, government pension funds, and proxy advisors, they ousted three ExxonMobil board members in a climate proxy battle. Shareholders also passed a resolution requiring Chevron to reduce its downstream emissions, the latter a de facto mandate to withdraw from oil and gas. That's, if I could interject, that seems like we will destroy you from within type of reality. See, that didn't take legislation. That took taking over the board at Chevron in order to put woke, green, energy-loving folks in charge of an oil and gas company. Back to the Journal. America's big banks have redlined U.S. coal companies and refused to finance oil projects in Anwar, which the 2017 GOP tax reform opened up to development. Now the Biden administration is trying to wall off the Arctic again as it launches a regulatory assault on fossil fuels, from tighter emission rules to endangered species protections. The anti-carbon left says the U.S. must banish fossil fuel to meet the Paris goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees. Let me pull a figure out of my sphincter. Relative to pre-industrial temperatures, that is, this is incompatible with a worldwide population that is expected to grow by 2 billion by 2050. It would require an enormous reorganization of the global economy that would keep billions of people in poverty. Electric vehicles would have to make up 60% of worldwide car sales by 2030, according to a recent International Energy Agency report. Indian Minister of New and Renewable Energy Raj Kumar Singh said in March, quote, "You have 800 million people who do not have access to electricity. You can't say that they have to go to net zero carbon. They have to develop." Unless there's some technological breakthrough, demand for fossil fuels is going to continue to grow for decades. And Russia and China will take advantage of U.S. energy disarmament. Russian oil giant Rosneft warned last fall that retrenchment by U.S. and European companies would result in higher prices and shortages. Quote, "Someone will need to step in," the senior executive said. In November, Rosneft announced a $170 billion oil and gas project in Russia's north, which it claims can supply the entire world's oil demand for a year. It says the project will be the world's largest liquefied natural gas producer by 2030. Russia also laying down thousands of miles of oil and gas pipelines to supply Europe and Asia. Vladimir Putin is gloating that Russia's Nord Stream 2 gas plant to Germany will soon be finished, as Biden has refused to sanction Russian companies running the project. But he didn't care about upsetting Canada when he killed the Keystone XL pipeline, nor Alaskans when he suspended the Anwar leases. Biden wants to curtail North American energy development while he stands by as Russia uses its natural resources for strategic gain. Who's in bed with the Russians now? Huh? Trump?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That includes coal, by the way. Russia spending more than $10 billion on railroad upgrades to boost its coal exports. According to a new report by Global Energy Monitor, coal producers in Australia, China, India, Russia, and South Africa are planning mining projects that would increase global output of coal by 30%. China has 112 coal mines under construction. Did you hear that? Under construction. It's also developing shale. Progressives want to surrender one of America's most strategic economic advantages in the name of saving the climate, but banishing fossil fuels in the United States won't eliminate carbon emissions, which will be produced somewhere else. So will the jobs, economic growth, and geopolitical leverage. Amen, exclamation point, bold, in caps. America's energy gift to dictators. Thanks to the editorial board of the Journal for that one. Putting an exclamation point on it, too. 628-55 KRCD Talk Station. Cullen for a residential electric project. 632, 55 Care City Talk Station. Talk guns after the top of the hour with Chris Doerr of OhioGunOwners.org. In the meantime, got some local stories. Of course, gasoline prices is a big topic of conversation of late. Spiked to $3.15 in Cincinnati, highest since 2014, in the fall of 2014. It's gone up 20 cents over the last 4 days. It's just unconscionable. And go back to, I'm just going to blame Joe Biden and the greenies. Anyhow, final showdown in Ohio. It's the budget. Senate voted 25-8 along party lines on its version, the Senate's version of the $75 billion budget, two-year state budget. House passed their version in April. The two chambers are going to have till June 30th to decide what's in it and what's out from each plan. About 60% of the plans overlap. The split comes on issues like the size of an income tax cut, school funding, rural broadband, and access to subsidized child care. Biggest divide, how to pay for K through 12 education. The House spent years writing its plan to have criticized by the Senate for slapping its version together in a couple of weeks. Senate Democrats prefer the House plan. Biggest two differences are the calculation for the base cost, which is what schools get per child, and the state's share, which is how much local districts should be able to raise on their own. Each plan has its own formulas, and on both sides, they think theirs is better. This is going to have to resolve this in committee. Let's see here. Both House and Senate included an across-the-board income tax cut for Ohioans. Question is it going to be the House version with a 2% cut at a cost of $380 million over the biennium? Senate version, a 5% reduction, totaling $874. I love how they say the cost. The only cost is the cost to government. It doesn't cost you and me a dime. Actually, we get to keep either 2% more or a 5% more. Lawmakers in the House go with the Senate's version. They needed to figure out what they want to cut. Senate removed money from Medicaid administration and rural broadband grants. Inside the Senate budget, non-budgetary items like a plan to change how parents are notified about the sex education classes, add party affiliation to judicial candidates on state ballots. We've talked about that on the program many times. And let commuters seek refunds for the income taxes they paid while working from home. Uh-oh, there it is. There it is. Talk with David Mann about that just the other day. The Senate version is retroactive. So you municipalities that have been keeping taxes, even though your citizens or your workers, rather, weren't working within your jurisdiction, you're going to have to give it back unless this gets pulled out. That's the big one right there. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, everything else is very important. It's, of course, a $75 billion budget, but you get a deer in the headlights look kind of thing whenever you bring up the idea that they're going to have to retroactively refund all of that tax dollars, all of the earnings tax. I don't know how they're going to do it. Vice Mayor Smitherman suggested that we'd have to get a bond. We'd have to issue a bond and get and borrow the money to pay it back. It's close to $100 million. 635, 55 KRC Talk Station. 7. Yeah, I just saw a text from my wife who reminded me. I knew about it. I had mentioned on the program this morning. Jim Renacci has announced that he is going to run against Governor Mike DeWine, going to challenge him in a primary. So I know a lot of my listeners are familiar with Jim Renacci. He did run for governor at one point, only to drop out and try to run against Sherrod Brown for the Senate. That didn't go so well for him. But he's back in the game. Promising to, do a better job than DeWine. He's critical of DeWine for the entire COVID thing, hiring Dr. Amy Acton, which he said he would not have done, and running as a very pro-Trump Republican. So there's Jim Renacci. Anyhow, related, we've got, I don't know if you're paying attention, there's obviously massive inflationary pressures going on out there, not your normal kind of inflation that's happening right now. And I saw one illustration of something that, well, we all know can happen. If you pay close attention to economics, for all those out there screaming about $15 minimum wage and on, and you know, we need more, we have to have a living wage, you know, ultimately you end up paying for that, of course. It's simple, basic economics. You know, if you're paying people $8, $9, $10 an hour, and then you're forced to pay them $15 an hour, whatever it is you're selling, goods or services, that price is going to go up. Duh. And who does that impact the most? Right, the lower income folks that live in lower middle class. Chipotle Mexican Grill raising its menu prices. Why? Because of the starting pay. In May, the company announced it was offering increased wages across the board, resulting in a $15 average hourly wage by the end of, well, June. And it's in the middle of a hiring push. If you notice, there's a big supply problem. There are literally millions of people that are not working because they don't want to work, and 9 million plus available opportunities right now. And yes, many of them happen to be in the food industry, which it's a job. And of course, they have to pay more now to get people attracted to come in the door, which results in, you know, a 4% increase in food prices at Chipotle. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, 4%, but I'm sure you've noticed the price creep. If you go around and have a burger around town from time to time, you're like, dang, this burger used to be $8, $9. Now it's $12. Yep. And there's a reason for that as well. So they're calling it a perfect storm in terms of inflationary pressures, why everything seems to getting more expensive. So COVID-19 comes up, idles the factories, puts worker on furlough and lockdowns. Okay, they don't buy anything. None of the raw materials are purchased by these previously in operational factories. And then we reopen. Now companies are, well, trying to restock inventories they have. So it's creating a greater demand, putting supply chain strains. The supply chain itself is having problems. There's a shortage of shipping containers and bottlenecks at ports, which apparently have made matters worse and increased the cost of shipping. Of course, shipping costs increase, the price of the final good is going to increase. Again, simple economics. Shortage of everything from microchips to chicken. Chlorine's in short supply. Cheese prices going up because of the laws of supply and demand. Question is whether they're temporary byproducts of the pandemic or if the global economy is changing in ways that could permanently hike the cost of doing business. Some economists think it's the former, but others believe, well, like it currently is, inflation is widespread. Highest level inflation now since 2008. That according to the, at least in countries in the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Energy price hikes boosted annual inflation across these countries to 3.3%, but prices rising even when you take out food and fuel. I think you've noticed this one. We talked about it in the 5 o'clock hour. Gasoline prices now at a 7-year high. Last year, Brent crude was at $20 a barrel, below actually. It's now at 70 because of turnaround in demand. And then, of course, the supply chain problems. We had that canal shut down by that shipping container, and that caused a ripple effect. So I take the auto industry, a prime example of how events in the past year have upended supply chains and changed consumer behavior. Now, quote here from CNN reporting on this. The pandemic temporarily shuttered car factories last year, while the recession that followed torpedoed sales. When automakers responded by cutting back vehicle production and therefore orders for microchips, and semiconductor manufacturers reassigned their spare capacity to companies that were making products that were in demand, like smartphones and laptops and gaming devices, they weren't making semiconductors for cars, right? Then, when the car sales bounced back faster than people expected, manufacturers caught with their pants down. Now they're back at the end of the line for these chips that they need to order. Widespread shortages have forced Ford, Volkswagen, Fiat, Chrysler, and Nissan to, slash production, even though demand is high, idle the plants in some cases. That's pushed the price for your new car higher because they're in shorter supply, right? Economics kicking in yet again. The demand for used vehicles, therefore, goes through the roof, and now they are, one of the biggest sources of inflation in the United States of America. Used cars. Consider this. Rental car companies, they sold off their fleets really early on in the pandemic. They needed to shore up their finances, right? You remember Hertz selling, there's a big demand now for rental cars. And so they are out in the market, along with every other man, woman, and child in the United States, looking for a new car. Hertz is buying them up. Other rental car agencies, you might imagine. The same thing is going all over. So there's this big demand with them. And then they're also no longer selling the cars that they have in their inventory. So that keeps some of the used car market availability down. Price for used cars and trucks in the United States jumped 10% in April over the prior month. Biggest increase since 1953. Prices were up 21% compared to last year. Think about that. It makes me, for whatever reason, I just think of housing prices are up dramatically as well. Laws of supply and demand. Cost of raw materials needed to produce consumer goods. They are soaring because of infrastructure spending in China. It's also pointed out if Joe Biden gets his way on his $6 gazillion infrastructure bill, it's going to increase demand even more. And think about what $6 trillion in infrastructure buying can get today versus, say, a couple of years ago when the price of commodities weren't that much. The projects all just got a lot more expensive. Investment in green technologies is pushing for strong demand for metals like aluminum and copper. Tesla, they've reflected in the price increase. They added $2,000 to the price of their Model 3. Why? According to Elon Musk, materials cost increase. The lumber that you're buying. Anybody out there buying lumber lately? If you are, you know exactly where I'm going with this one. Let me put it in real terms. This is hard to believe. Again, the numbers crunched by CNN. The United States lumber shortage, this was tied to sawmill shutdowns from the pandemic, have added $36,000 to the price of an average new home. Added. That, according to the National Association of Home Builders.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Add into that. Your toilet paper, your diapers, your tampons, all going up because the rising cost of resin and pulp. There are even more factors. I could go through all of them. It's just, again, this cosmic alignment of all these bad things happening at once, coupled with some extraordinarily stupid policies by this administration, are hitting everyone really hard. I think this is bodes well for the Republicans next year, although you're going to have to wait for November 2022. 649, 55 KRC, the talk station. It's 654 on a Friday Eve. If you did not get a chance to listen, great conversation with Judge Anna Napolitano yesterday about the Fourth Amendment. And, it's just a sad, sad, sad thing to see when our law enforcement agencies just don't care. They just don't care. And I'm not, this isn't me condemning the Cincinnati Police Department or, the Butler County Sheriff's Office or anything like that. No, I'm talking about the FBI. Of course, the NSA came up during the discussion as well, but it was a rather funny set of circumstances, the facts behind what had happened. But this massive worldwide ring of gangsters, drug dealers, and things like that was busted because they were all using this app. It was a dark web available app. It allowed you to encrypt your conversations, your text, emails, or whatever, and communicate with your fellow criminals. Fine, that stuff exists. I mean, dark web is a dangerous and dark place. A lot of criminal activity occurs on there from everything I've heard from Tech Friday's Dave Hatter to people out there in the world that know what the dark web's all about. But one guy developed this. The mob and all these gangs had gotten a hold of it and were using it with abandon and talking out loud and openly about the crimes that they had perpetrated or the ones that they were planning. And so this bust, using this, listening into all their communications, resulted in, you know, the seizure of drugs and money and the arrests of people. And the point is, though, that they got the software, the FBI did, from the guy who invented it. I guess he was under indictment or being charged, and he wanted to get a lesser term. So he said, oh, by the way, all the criminals are using this. You might want to look into it. That's fine. But you got to get a warrant to listen into any individual's conversations. No. So Judge and I were talking about it. You can't do that. I mean, they do, and they don't care about your Fourth Amendment. They listen into the conversations. They got the communications that were private. Yes, it involved criminal activity, but they're not allowed to go out in the world and just start looking for criminal activity. They have to have probable cause that you are engaged in criminal activity. Probable cause, and you have to go in front of a judge and get a warrant to listen in on telephone conversations. The idea is we do not want an Orwellian world where the authorities, Big Brother or whoever, can listen into our conversations without us, well, at least being, giving them probable cause to do it. And then we get to go into court and test it, which was the other component of this. Now, any of the information that was gathered by listening to these criminals, at least insofar as they're subject to the U.S. Constitution, those criminals are going to go into court and move to suppress any evidence that led to their arrest. Why? Because it was gathered illegally in violation of the Fourth Amendment. Bah! It was a good conversation. I always enjoy those with Judge Napolitano. That's just one of a couple of topics we went over. You can find that at 55KRC.com on the podcast page. Don't go away from OhioGunOwners.org. Chris Doerr on constitutional carry and the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Be right back. It's 7:05 at 55KRC CB Talk Station. Hope you're having a decent Friday Eve. Been looking forward to having Chris Doerr from OhioGunOwners.org on the program, and he is on the program. Chris Doerr, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today to talk about Second Amendment issues.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me on.
Real good. I think I'm going to be a felon here at some point based upon what the ATF's doing. They want to put us all in jail or take our guns and stuff away from us. Let us first begin with just the whole concept of the Second Amendment and the idea of constitutional carry, which I'm a proponent of. I mean, you and I can both read the plain language of the Second Amendment. You know, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. If you have to get something by way of the state's permission, even an innocuous, easy one, that is an impediment to keeping and bearing arms. And so it is an infringement. If I'm an adult and I live in the United States of America, I've got a protected right. How come I just can't buy a gun and carry it and use it as I see fit?
Well, that's the way our membership surely thinks about it. It's basically leveling the playing field between the criminal class and the citizen class. These criminals obviously don't go through the licensing process, but yeah, this bill is before the Ohio General Assembly. It's House Bill 227. Essentially what it does is gets government out of the rights regulation business when it comes to guns, and allows people to just carry. If they're legally able to own a firearm, they can carry that firearm without begging government permission or adding their name to a government database, which we see all the time around us every day now, where companies are accidentally releasing information, or hackers are getting in and stuff like that. So this bill would clean that up, would wipe that infringement off the books. It's been passing in states all across America.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that your name's in a database kind of thing. And while I am unqualified in my admission, and I'm actually proud that I own firearms, it's a hobby of mine. I like to shoot. You know, some people don't like it. I don't knit. It's my common joke, Chris, because, you know, I don't use knitting needles. You can kill someone with a knitting needle, and I'm not asking you to ban knitting needles, but that ain't my thing. I like going to the range. I like shooting skeet. I like shooting five stand and going out in sporting clays and rifles and pistols.
That's right.
You know, it's just fun. So with that, I'm sorry. I'm at a loss of why that there's something wrong with that, or especially since the founders recognized it as such a fundamental thing. I mean, it was the second thing they came up with when they're talking about protecting us from government.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. In fact, not only did the founders understand this, but now 21 states across America have woken up and realized that they don't have the right to regulate that kind of a thing. I mean, it's a lot of people, gun owners in states all across America, are forcing their legislatures to pass this legislation because at the end of the day, everybody is finally realizing that the Second Amendment is not about deer hunting. It's about maintaining our freedom against tyranny. And as we've seen over the last year and a half, given the opportunity, government goes full-blown tyrannical the moment it has the chance, the moment it has the votes, the moment it thinks it can get away with it, which is why we've seen five states already this year, possibly six. It depends on what the Louisiana governor does. But we're up to 21 states now, possibly 22 by the end of this week. And yet here in Ohio.
Yeah. What's the deal?
It's like these people, they all campaign at election time, like they're Charlton Heston in the flesh. But when they get to when their butt hits their chair in downtown Columbus in the Rife Building, they develop legislative amnesia, and they forget about all of their campaign promises. They haven't lifted a finger. This General Assembly has not lifted a finger to protect our gun rights, even in the face of what is an obvious full-blown attack from Congress and the Joe Biden administration.
You know, it's interesting, as I was thinking about this, the left loves to complain about infringing on anyone's ability to vote and expanding it. It's so important. It's fundamental. And here we have, again, I'm going back to the Second Amendment, embodied in our Constitution. One of the big impediments against our government is the right to keep and bear arms, yet they'll do anything within their power to make it more difficult. That has a larger impact on the poor, whether they want to tax bullets or the purchase of firearms, make you go through an expensive 12-hour class and have to, you know, allocate the time to sit in there. That is a much bigger impediment on the poor, and I would argue, who more needs firearms than people living in poor, dangerous, gang-ridden communities?
Well, the Crime Prevention Research Center, John Lott's organization, has done very deliberate and specific studies on that issue, highlighting the fact that minority populations need the protection and oftentimes invoke the protections of gun rights laws more than any other demographic. And, you know, let's not forget that the real roots of gun control are racist in their origin. That's something you never hear about in these committee hearings.
That's true.
We'll have legislators grilling me when I'm testifying on behalf of our membership. They're trying to insinuate that somehow the pro-freedom position is a racist position, and it's absolutely bass-ackwards. If anything, it's the exact opposite. And if anybody who studies history realizes, oh yeah, these laws were created originally to keep firearms away from minorities, to keep them at unequal status.
No question about it. You know, and I've said many, many times, I wish there were more armed people in these impoverished communities with high crime. I mean, John Lott's book, you know, More Crime or More Guns, Less Crimes, and proven it statistically that the amount of crime would go down. If you have a thug out there with a gun and he's likely to run into, you know, some 55-year-old guy or woman walking down the street who is headed up to their eyeballs with the crime and is going to defend themselves, I think they'd be less likely to pull that gun out and maybe use it. Like, dang, everybody bought a gun in the neighborhood. I can't commit crime with reckless abandon like the old days.
Yeah, it's the old classic theory that the threat of mutual destruction is a good preventative measure. The good news is we are seeing minorities in Ohio and in states all across America. They are rising up in droves.
Good.
And buying huge amounts of firearms. Everything we've seen as far as the record numbers of sales in the last year, quite frankly, a huge portion of that has been minorities as they watch their neighborhoods getting burned and destroyed and looted and stuff like that.
And the police taken away from them.
Yeah, and the police taken away from them. They're like, you know what, forget this. I'm going to go and buy a firearm.
Right.
And you go into any gun store today, you'll see it plain as day. So the Democrats, the radical left, the rhinos, we have a big problem with that here in Ohio. they have a problem on their hands because the lie that they are trying to sell to the American people, to the people in Ohio, it's not falling on willing ears anymore. People see through the lie. And the radical left agenda is being exposed for what it is, which is total control. Gun control is about control. It's never been about lowering crime or anything like that for these people. And I'm a pro-life guy. I don't mean to get off subject here, but if the left cared so much about innocent life, they'd probably start pursuing pro-life legislation in the state house or in Congress.
Yeah, isn't that true? But yeah, you raise a great point. When you take away the right of an individual to effectively defend themselves, and there is no greater equalizer than a firearm, you become beholden and dependent upon some other power, and your local police department, some federal or National Guard or something. But in effect, you have to rely on government, higher power, to come and save you from a situation that you could otherwise extricate yourself from. It's emasculating. I mean, it's the antithesis of freedom.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you kind of bring up there. A lot of times what you'll hear in these committee rooms and the arguments from the left is that, why can't we be more like New Zealand? You know, they pass all these gun control laws. They take away the individual right to own a firearm, and their violent crime rate drops. Well, whether or not it's true that their violent crime rate dropped, the point of the Second Amendment is a safeguard against government gone awry. So them sitting there and saying that there's not a problem in New Zealand with gun control, well, the fact of the matter is that the government of New Zealand has not turned on its people. And when you look at human history, the biggest takers of innocent life, the biggest murderers in human history have not been individuals, they've not been gangs, they've not been thugs or criminals, they've been governments that decided to commit genocide against their people. And ultimately, that's why we're fighting so hard to defend our Second Amendment freedoms.
Yep.
In our Article 1, Section 4 constitutional freedoms here in Ohio.
Chris Doerr, the name of the organization, Ohio Gun Owners. You go to ohiogunowners.org and check them out. They've got a bunch of information there, how to contact them, and some take action information as well. Chris, can you hang out? Because I want to talk about the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Can you stay for another segment and go over that? And also,
absolutely, the
new ATF move, which will turn a lot of us into felons in a moment's notice. We'll continue with this. It's 7:15 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station, because I want to mention Bond Furniture in beautiful. It is 7:19 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station, Friday Eve. And I hope you're having a happy one. Betsy Sunderman from Cincinnati City Council is going to join us at 7:40, followed by the I Told You So, Senator Rand Paul. He'll be on at 8:05. And, of course, we get an aviation report at 8:30 from J.E. Ratliff. In the meantime, I'm enjoying my conversation with Chris Doerr of the OhioGunOwners.org organization. We should check that out. Let us talk about the Second Amendment Preservation Act. This is a specific piece of legislation in your mind?
Yeah, it's House Bill 62 here in Ohio. It's introduced by Representative Michael Loichick. Basically, we all know that Joe Biden is trying his best, and the Democrats in D.C. are trying their best to pass massive federal gun control laws, bans on AR-15s, which is the most popular rifle in America. They want to have universal background checks. They want to totally outlaw the private individual sale of firearms. So we know that they're coming after our guns. House Bill 62, the Second Amendment Preservation Act, it's based on what's called the anti-commandeering doctrine. It basically says, okay, look, we know that the federal government doesn't have enough resources to enforce widespread federal gun control laws all the way down to the local level. And
true.
So what they do, what they do historically is they use state and local resources in order to enforce federal laws.
Yeah.
Well, knowing that, House Bill 62, we wrote this bill so that it would prevent federal government from commandeering state and local law enforcement agencies from enforcing the federal gun control laws, and it penalizes the officers or the departments if they try to, and it gives private citizens whose rights are infringed, it gives them standing to sue those entities in court themselves without having to wait for, you know, like say the Attorney General's office or something like that to fight on their behalf. So that's kind of the gist of it in a nutshell.
So it is almost like sanctuary cities in a way. I want to just point that out. This strategy has been used by the left in order to avoid enforcement of immigration laws that are on the books. So if we find offense with immigration laws, we just choose not to enforce them. So in this particular case, I think we collectively and uniformly, at least guys like you and me, Chris, find offense with any type of legislation that will mandate the repossession or confiscation of our firearms. Well, we just choose not to enforce those laws. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, we like to the comparison is quite oftentimes made between this and sanctuary cities, and we like to come back with, yeah, but this time it's for a legal purpose.
No, I get
rather
it.
Than what the left uses for. But actually, the anti-commandeering doctrine is an old one. It's been upheld by the Supreme Court, most notably in the 1800s, the Prince versus Pennsylvania. Federal government had passed a law, the Fugitive Slave Act, and it was trying to. The federal government wanted northern states to return slaves that had run away, to return them to their masters and owners back down south. And the state of Pennsylvania said, "No, we're not going to do that." And the Supreme Court upheld that ruling and said that no, the federal government cannot force states to do things that it does not agree with, and so it's the same doctrine here. There's also a whole slew of other cases that back up that as well. But that's what it's based on. So it's very sound constitutional language here that we've come up with, and it basically puts the state of Ohio in between a tyrannical federal government and the rights of the individual. And we think that's a better better way to go about this than
right.
trying to do this stuff at the county level. You know, there's been a lot of widespread, you know, passage of these county level resolutions, but we'd prefer the state of Ohio to be standing up for the rights of Ohioans rather than waiting until it goes all the way down to the county level.
Yeah.
Then you're in real trouble.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Well, I like the idea. It's sound. And then finally, before we part company, Chris Doerr of Gun Owners Action Center, which is, again, I'm going to put you online at ohiogunowners.org. The ATF, Biden's ATF, proposed a new regulation that would define a handgun as a short-barreled rifle if that handgun basically has a piece of plastic stuck on the back of it that could act as a stabilizing brace. So you have taken a completely lawful handgun, and you put a stabilizing brace on the handle so you can tuck it up into your shoulder like a rifle. That becomes criminal. A criminal act. That gun would no longer be lawful unless you went through a full, what is it, FFL licensing?
Yeah, you'd have to go through and pass the, go through like the 9 different steps that it takes to get one of these SBRs. And of course, there's going to be constitutional challenges to this.
Of course.
These are owned by the millions. I mean, the moment they started talking about this, I think myself and about everybody I know on planet Earth went out and started buying these things
as fast
as they possibly could, because none of us, I don't think any gun owner really plans on obeying this stuff anymore. We saw what happened when a lot of gun owners rolled over on the bump stocks. A lot of us were considered crazy when we said, no, we have to defend that ground. If we cede that ground, they're coming for more. You give an inch, they come for the mile.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, these things are widely used. widely owned in the gun rights community. And if you own a pistol with one of these braces on it, when the, and the barrel length is over 7 inches, they want to make you a felon. They want to take away your right to vote. They want to take away your right to own a gun. Throw you in federal prison for it.
It's just so dumb as I think about that because, you know, right next to, let's say you've got that over 7-inch barrel handgun and you've got its attached, perhaps even detachable brace. And right next to it, you've got a full-frame AR-15 or AK-47, totally legal. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely, totally legal. And honestly, you and I both know, Chris, if we're looking for pure accuracy, we want to hit what we're aiming at, we would grab the rifle first before we would go with the pistol with the attached stock on it because it's not going to be as accurate as a regular rifle.
And if they're so concerned about these powerful rifles out there, apparently they've never run across me and my buddies or, you know, pretty much a lot of people watching and listening to the show right now, who have a 243 deer rifle that they're very accurate with.
Right.
270. I mean, you want to talk about some power.
Yeah.
So look at people's hunting rifles.
I know.
Come on.
I know. It's funny.
Thugs and criminals. They don't use these guns. It's not about the thugs or criminals. It's not about life. It's about control.
It is about control. OhioGunOwners.org is where you're going to find Chris and his information. Check it out. Bookmark it. And, Chris, I know you and I will talk again sometime, hopefully soon, and keep up the great work you're doing on behalf of the Second Amendment.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Brian. Have a good day.
You too. 727 right now. 55. It is 7:28 right now. Oh, request from my executive producer, Jez Strecker, before we get to Betsy Sunderman from Council. Joe is not in charge of programming, okay? Joe is not responsible for the selection of which news is carried by iHeartMedia. That is a corporate-level decision. And, of course, when it comes to who's going to be filling the noon to 3 p.m. spot in the absence of the late, great Rush Limbaugh, Joe was not consulted. Neither was I. Matter of fact, I don't think anybody in this building, I don't think anybody in the city of Cincinnati was consulted. Some people are going to be happy with the new lineup. Some people are going to be upset. Joe just asked that I please ask you, don't call him to complain. He has nothing to do with it at all. Is that good, Joe? Well, unless you want to get an ear referral from Strecker, in which case, knock yourself out. But I wouldn't recommend going down that road. And without further ado, welcome back to the 55 KRC Morning Show's Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman. It's good to have you on, Betsy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I hope you can say the same.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we've been through this Wendell Young thing. You're responsible for the charter amendment that was overwhelmingly approved by the voters that gave you in council the right to vote to suspend any council member under federal indictment. You went through that exercise. That vote failed. It was, who was it? Smitherman and who else?
Gooden.
Who was it?
Steve Gooden.
Gooden. I'm sorry. Steve, you're out there. I apologize. So Smitherman and Gooden vote no. And I think politically they were hoping that the Supreme Court would resolve this and suspend Wendell Young on their own. That didn't happen. They said no. He can finish out his term. Now, I scratch my head over the reasoning behind that. I don't know or care, but that was the final outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I heard lots of different reasons. They were talking about the Gang of Five shouldn't be voting. And, you know, I think it's if the Gang of Five wants to vote out one of their own, why shouldn't they be allowed to do that?
No, I listen, the conflict of interest thing I don't think existed except for Wendell Young himself. Wendell Young was the only guy I thought had a conflict because of the Seelbach. Seelbach was the only one that had a conflict because of his, of course, that would give him the right to select Wendell Young's replacement. But it's all academic now because unless you disagree with the predictions of Vice Mayor Smitherman, and I think if you ask Wendell Young directly, are you planning on stepping down, the answer is going to be no or hell no.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you think Seelbach had a conflict being able to appoint,
yeah,
the vote and the appointment are two completely different legal mechanisms. So you could let him vote on it And then if he's going to replace Wendell, you could then file some kind of injunction to stop that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there is a conflict there. I think he should be able to appoint the replacement. But I'm saying
it's academic.
No conflict with the vote.
It's academic.
You object to the appointment. Yeah.
But we're having an academic discussion because he's not suspended. So
yeah.
This Seelbach is not engaged in the process. It's just status quo on Cincinnati City Council. I don't know. What do you think of the optics on that? I mean, we're not exactly a shining star in the nation in terms of the makeup of council and the level of corruption that we all are facing.
Yeah, I mean, we look horrible. We've looked horrible the whole time I've been there. It's been so embarrassing to work at City Hall. Every time I run into someone I haven't seen for a while, they say, are you really working down there? Why are you working down there? I mean, usually when you get a new job, people say, hey, I heard about your new job.
Congratulations, right?
And everyone says, are you going to get out of there? That sounds terrible. I'm like, that's great. I mean,
well,
I mean, it's like, I always tell people, it's like when I used to live in a condo and I was on the condo association, it kind of feels like that. Like, you're the most hated people in the building because no one ever is pleased with anything. All you do is get complaints all the time. That city council is just a big condo association.
Okay. And you know what? That's a fair parallel because I guess I was going to ask you, do you feel as though the working relationship with the members of council is dysfunctional to the point where it just isn't not a functioning body effectively? Or is it just that the folks on council are the recipients of just a bunch of people complaining about whatever happens to be on their complaint list?
I mean, the current council, I think, is easy to work with.
Okay.
The council a year ago was very difficult to work with. I mean, a year ago, PG was kind of trying to run council. He was kind of already acting like the mayor.
Yeah.
And it caused a lot of fights. I mean, he would announce, like, we are all going to vote like this, and all the Democrats are going to do this. And very often, the mayor would have to say, you're not the mayor. I'm the mayor. Stop acting like the mayor.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really bad. And there was lots of division. You know, there were, like, the Gang of Five, and then there was like these other outsiders, including me.
Yeah.
But now it's much better. I mean, I get along with Seelbach. I get along with Landsman. I mean, I get along with the people I'm supposed to not get along with.
So, Betsy, it sounds to me like the scrutiny that has been placed upon the city since in the aftermath of the corruption has resulted in a better functioning body of government.
Yeah, I mean, having a bunch of appointed people, I think, is working better than having a bunch of indicted people. I know we get a lot of crap for being appointed. Well, only the Republicans get crap for being appointed. I've never heard anyone complain about Jan Michelle Kearney being appointed. Like, her votes are valid, but ours are not for some reason.
Well,
so I don't know, but it's definitely a more pleasant environment to work in.
Good.
And I feel like I can go to any council member now and actually discuss issues. And I didn't feel like that a year ago.
Good. Well, I'll tell you what, on that note, we'll pause and bring it back because, you know, we're in the middle of budget season. And I don't know if you saw the word out of Columbus, but the Senate passed its $75 billion budget. And there's a line item in there that should probably bring some great concern to the members of It is 8:50 at 55 KRC, the talk station. A couple days worth of little L libertarian philosophy yesterday. Congressman Thomas Massey followed by Judge Ana Napolitano and some terrific conversations with those men. You can find them on my blog page, 55KRC.com. Today, after we would finish with Betsy Sunderman, top of the hour news, Senator Rand Paul. Senator, I told you so, Paul, will be on the program here on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Betsy, I don't know if you saw this. The Senate in the state of Ohio has figured out its budget. The House passed its previously. My recollection of the breakdown was that the House bill has a retroactive refund of the earnings tax to January of 2021. The Senate's version, however, allows a retroactive refund all the way back to last year. So when the lockdowns kicked in and people stayed at home, clearly they weren't working within the city limits, at least a lot of them. The taxes continued to come out and go into the coffers of the city of Cincinnati. What happens if the Senate version passes and you have to retroactively refund all the way back to last year, Betsy?
We are screwed.
That's what Smitherman said, I think verbatim.
Oh, well, he's right. I agree with him. I mean, we would be so screwed. I mean, our entire operating budget is $400 million. And just from COVID this past year, I don't know what the final numbers were. They were estimating we were going to be down $40 or $60 million for income tax. I mean, if we have to refund $100 million of earnings tax, I mean, I don't know how you cut $100 million from a $400 million budget. I mean, I guess there are two options. Either we would have to do mass layoffs or we'd have to borrow a ton of money. But I mean, you have to pay that back, and that's expensive to pay back.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It would be,
well, Betsy, I asked Smith.
I mean, knowing the Democrats on council, I'm assuming we'd pick the borrow money debt route.
Uh-huh,
but,
uh-huh.
I, you know, maybe a combination of the two, lay off a bunch of people. And I mean,
yeah, this
as everybody knows, you know, half of our budget, not a half, but a little less than half of our budget goes to police and fire. So, of course, we'd have to lay off some police and fire, which, you know, the unions will be all over that and try to prevent that, which would make us probably have to cut a lot of other stuff people like.
Well, it could impact our bond rating. I mean, yeah, that's going to be a problem that's over the entire country. But whether or not others are struggling with the same kind of phenomenon, but at least across the state, because every municipality that collected its income tax or earnings tax is going to be in the same position. So this is going to be a spilling over problem. But I guess I'm thinking, and Smitherman also said you'd have to borrow it. And that's an amount comparable to what we borrowed for that streetcar. I mean, it's $100 million. It's not a small, paltry sum.
Right. I mean, that's why we need a big savings account. If we're responsible, we put money into a savings account, like a rainy day fund.
How about that coronavirus money, Betsy? Isn't there enough there to cover perhaps having to refund all this?
I mean, we already doled it all out, right? I mean,
I know. That's why I asked the question, Betsy.
The problem is, if we do let's say we had this giant savings account and then we get a whole new city council and mayor in November, they could just blow the savings account in their first month. I mean, there's no accountability. There's no rule saying you have to keep the savings account ongoing. I mean, maybe we should make a law that says you have to have X percentage of your operating funds in a savings account or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A rainy day fund mandated a deposit. I hear you. The equitable person to me, the fairness person to me, the justification for the tax analysis to me suggests that it should be retroactively refunded. But I am not so callous as to fail to appreciate the epic pain that's going to bring on the city of Cincinnati. So we'll have to wait and see with our popcorn out as to what happens. Betsy, let me leave you on this thought. Can you imagine if that ballot initiative had passed requiring $50 million up front every year go to the home or go to the affordable housing, and then you had this retroactive thing on top of it?
Well, I still don't think that would have been in perpetuity. I mean, there would have been lawsuits flying all over the place. I think we would have been screwed with that for 1 year and then never again. Or we could have put on another charter amendment. But yeah, for this year, it would have been horrendous. But, I mean, we ended up putting 30-something million toward affordable housing anyway. So we almost did that, you know. So, no, it would not. Okay. I'm thinking this through out loud. We already put 30-something million, 32 million into affordable housing. So, no, I don't think it would have been devastating this 1 year. But in perpetuity, yeah, it would be awful.
Yeah, you don't want anything
like
that attached.
I'm kind of like you. I think that black and white law, we should have to pay back the money, but there might be some exception because it would destroy cities. If every city has to do this, I mean, so many cities are going to be unbondable. So the court might make an exception.
Equitable theories in the law as well as, you know, straight legal interpretations. We will see. Again, that's a real nail biter for a lot of folks. Betsy Sunderman, thank you so much for joining the program this morning. It's a real pleasure talking with you, and I hope we get to talk again soon. And I will, in the meantime, wish you the best of health and have a great weekend.
You too. Talk to you soon.
All right. 756 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Senator Rand Paul. Rand, I told you so, Paul. He'll be coming up next. I hope you can stick around for that. Plus, Jay Ratliff at 8:30 with an aviation update. I'll be back after the news.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.